time with Daniel for the Midweek Pod. We witnessed Manchester United 3, Sheffield United 2 yesterday, and a classic of the genre from United 4-2. I do you a disservice, United. That was a fine performance.
What a team.
What a team. By the way, I mean, we talked about Bruno Fernandes last week and asking why the haters hate. He has dragged us through the last few weeks, like on his own, and he definitely dragged us through this game. So, no, props to Bruno already. Is there a player in the United team that gives a shit more than Bruno? Because I just don't think there is.
I thought about this when we came off air last week, that someone I know from United just doesn't love Bruno, and we often argue about this. But one of the things he said was, whatever else he says about him, the guy will run through brick walls for United.
Yeah.
And there just aren't that many players we can say that of.
No, and it feels like he's chucked his best years away on his dreadful United team. Yeah.
100%.
So.
But I find, the idea that you couldn't integrate him into a good team where he gets more of the ball, has to do fewer heroics, and he's not expected to try and do something all the time because he doesn't have to, because he gets opportunities, or he wouldn't suddenly be good. And you've got like guys with like, I don't know, like Y Scout access or whatever, that genuinely think they understand football better than him.
Yeah.
And he is almost always guys. And I think that regular listeners will know that we see the issue with him. And I think particularly, like, for me, the issue with him is not the constant attempts at heroics, because I think that more than anything is much more a reflection of where he is and who's around him than his temperament or ability. The issue I have with him is, if we're going to have Mainoo in the team as well, are we going to be physical enough?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a fair question. The question of Bruno's profligacy with passing was brought up by scouts before United bought him, right? They knew this. This was the question mark they had. They knew that he gave the ball away a lot. They knew that he tried a lot of stuff. And that's always been the trade-off. And I think at the time, Paul and I were arguing about Bruno, and I was like, yeah, in the big games, we might regret having him in the side. But I think over the net of his career with United, he's definitely created more than he's wasted. So,
also, I don't think that he's wasting the ball that much more than De Bruyne, particularly.
He just
gets the ball in better areas with better players around him.
Yeah.
And the difference, again, is it's not the difference between them. Although I agree, I get back to the point I just made. One of the reasons, and I'm probably the main reason I think De Bruyne is a better player than he is because of the physicality. De Bruyne has a change of pace and he's a big lad. He's a brute. And when you add that to all the other stuff, then that's very hard to deal with. But yeah, I think I have been disappointed in Bruno this season, but at the same time, again, like the constant is around him, not the guy. He's created more chances than any other player in Europe's top five league, which itself, you think that's a good effort.
Yeah.
And I guess you might say, well, he's in a crap team, so he has to do everything. Or you might say, well, he's often in a team that has less than 50% possession, that evacuates midfield, that's conceding regularly 20 shots a game, and to still be top of that in that environment, not even playing well. Yeah, he's a footballer, man.
Yeah, he is. And actually, coming to bring the conversation full circle on the data and the Y-Scout tacticos, that group of people would say, actually, his ball progression this year has actually been better in those games where he's been asked to play deeper. Now, it wasn't against Sheffield United. He was the orchestrator the number 10, because Eriksen was behind him. For much of the season, he's played deep in Scott McTominay, or at least for a number of games, and the tacticos would say that he's progressed the ball more, and it's just been a change of role. Anyway, United did a lot of United things last night, didn't they?
And some not United things, I guess. As in, it is not that often that you see United properly pen a team in. Obviously, we still gave away some ridiculous goals, but the first half, we penned them in, they couldn't get out, and that's what it's meant to look like.
Yeah, there were probably too many low-value shots in that first half, which, like, United weren't getting it into the right positions to make sure that those chances were better quality, But they're putting them in. It was 80% possession, wasn't it? When do we start giving the goals away? I forget now.
One either side of half time, but one side of half time.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, a classic from Andre Onana, who we'd been praising for doing better, and then he's dived over one and then given a stupid ball away in subsequent games, which is not awesome.
Giving the stupid ball away, I guess I can say okay. Then goalkeepers make a few stupid errors a season. He made loads, hasn't made one for a while. And I guess I'm assuming that it's going to be the not saving the stuff that he should, rather than just presenting goals like that, that is going to be the problem with him long term.
Yeah, I don't expect him to do that much. I mean, I thought, and I think this is a problem again with how United are set up and not Onana. I thought we'd see more of the sort of ball possession stuff from him. Instead, he goes long a lot more than I expected. And again, this is the model that Ten Hag has set up this season. We're going back to front very, very quickly, trying to get our largely ineffective wingers into the game. Although I wouldn't blame Garnacho for his performance too much last night. I think he kept going. Anthony was silly.
Anthony Garnacho played okay. Like I felt like his finishing was better last season than it was this season. Shouldn't have missed the chance he missed, even though he made it really well. One thing I guess I'd thought was, if we're not going to experiment in these games, when are we going to experiment? And I guess I'm thinking, Alan, you've got Sheffield United at home. It should be impossible to lose, but even if you do, it doesn't make that much difference.
No, that's right.
So I guess what I'm kind of thinking, and I know that these children are young, so I might be talking bollocks, but I guess I'm thinking we might need to buy a left back in the summer. Probably do need to buy a left back.
I think they're looking at the Girona left back.
Should we therefore find out if Harry Amos is any good at this level?
Yeah. Well, he's in the squad last night, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He was on the bench. Just because I think with all these things, whenever we buy players, one of the things I'm always thinking is, who are the young players and are they going to block them? Because if we have young, obviously, if you get the opportunity to sign someone who's just brilliant, then you just buy them. But if you've got young players who you think might be good, then for me, I'm always thinking you need to make sure that there's a route to the first team for them. So I felt like I'm just so sick of Wan-Bissaka. Like his performance, and after we recorded on Sunday, I suddenly felt like we sort of forgot to talk about how shit he specifically was in once things started going wrong in that game. Yeah. Like the lolloping running, like my friend's got this. It's a giant St. Bernard Poodle cross, maybe. Can't remember what it's called. Anyway, it's a fucking gigantic bastard. It's an awesome dog. But the way it runs, it just really reminds me of Wan-Bissaka. Just like it doesn't seem to sprint almost. It's a lollop.
Yeah.
And getting caught upfield and lolloping back and not marking, losing patience, losing men at the back post. Just, I felt, like it might be good to see something different. In the same way, why am I watching more Anthony when I could watch Ahmad?
Yeah.
Against Sheffield United. What is the point?
No, I do get the point. I actually thought, I suspected that this United side would sort of collapse towards the end of the season because none of these games count. And that wasn't true yesterday. I mean, stupid goals given away, but that wasn't the collapse. And it was a better performance than I was half expecting. Cause like this team is not mentally strong. And I was like, games that don't count for anything, how are they going to get themselves up for it? I don't buy it for most of these players, but it wasn't quite that. So I was being unfair, but yeah, Wan-Bissaka has been shit recently. And I'm not sure Dallow's been much better either on the other side.
Dallow was dreadful against Chelsea, and another game in which he was also dreadful. I forget which City, maybe, but he played very well in both Liverpool games. And it's not so much whether these people are good enough or not. It's not whether Wan-Bissaka is in dreadful form or whatever. It's the Wan-Bissaka is not the future of this team and this club. So now we've got these games that mean jack shit. Why are we not including players who are actually going to mean something and trying to give them as much experience as possible? And fine, if the answer to that is Amos isn't ready and he's literally on the bench because they need some names, I guess fair enough. But I didn't need to see Anthony in that game. I'd much rather have seen Ahmad, who also probably isn't good enough.
No, probably not. No, probably not. Good stat here. Harry Maguire has doubled the amount of goals that Anthony has this season. That's just in the Premier League, because he's got a few in Europe as well, hasn't he?
But do we also have to subtract the ones that were his fault for a Harrant's difference?
Yes, I think that would be fair.
The question about his goal.
Yeah.
Was he going for goal or was he trying to stick that across?
And let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Flicked header.
So, yeah, I mean,
there was a debate on the Football Clichés podcast last time out about what angle you need to have for it to qualify as a flick. And I think that's a flick. That was a narrow angle. I think he was going for goal.
Yeah. No, but a flick is not just about an angle. A flick is about the movement of the head. So like a normal head is that, and a flick is that.
Yeah.
Like that. Oh yeah, disagree with that. I think I feel like they haven't stated their terms properly there, but they do excellent and important work. So
very, very important stuff. Yes.
So I don't want to criticize, but yeah, that flick to me is determined by feels like side to side. Actually, that's not true. Because you can also it can also be that. I guess I'm calling generally things that are side to side or backwards flick.
Well, it's a glance, isn't it? Maybe there's a difference between a flick and a glance. That was a glancing header with a flick.
So a flick, yeah, a flick probably needs a neck movement. A glancing header more needs to come off the side of the... I mean, I'm looking at my own forehead here, thinking that's quite a big surface area. the big surface area.
Not as big as Harry's. I make fun of him, but he's not been bad this season. Like, he was dreadful last season, and he's come in and done...
And worse the season before.
Yeah. I mean, I say that in a team that has conceded 50 goals. So, he hasn't been that good. Let's be clear about it. I mean, I'm sure in the summer that focus would be on the defence first, because there's just been way too many injuries. I mean, if they're buying a left-back, one's got to go. They can't have three left-backs and Harry Amos. They've got to think about both right full backs, because neither is quite good enough and you can't merge them together like something out of the fly or something. And then Johnny Evans is ancient, Rafa Varane is injured all the time, Victor Lindelof is shite, and Harry Maguire, well, they've got to decide. He's also year of his contract. So that's a lot of work to do if you're thinking about the priorities. And then you need two midfielders as well.
And a striker.
And probably a striker, though, you know.
100, you might have got.
You've got to have backup to Rasmus. We need a backup. Which is good for him. He celebrated it thoroughly.
And he made sure, but that's what I want to see. Like, he made sure he scored that goal, because I can't remember who it was, but there was a tap in behind him and he made sure, because he needed that goal and you knew he needed it.
And he worked hard for it as well. He moved quickly. And after missing that one at the weekend, a really good chance right at the end against Coventry, then he needed that one. Otherwise, we'd be talking about him again. I mean, he only touched the ball 8 times in that first half. There's something with the way United are playing where they just do not use him at all.
And to be fair, like, maybe the way he's moving, that I agree that it is for the manager and for them to find a way to get him into the game, but also feel like, should he have found a solution and been out just sitting down with the dickheads and saying, this is what I need.
Yeah. All right. What was the second goal? I'm totally blanking on United's second now. It was the Fernandez Harrant's pen. Now, Harrant's was the first.
I know it was the first one. That the opener.
As the equaliser. Then the Fernandez pen.
On that penalty, if you can take a penalty like that, I don't understand why you don't take every penalty like that.
I know.
Because you could, and it would never, ever get saved.
Never. And that's the thing. Like, I'm sure on the training ground that the completion rate of penalties is way higher than the 80% it is in actual game. So obviously the pressure makes an impact. But yeah, if you can hit it cleanly into the corner and don't have to do all the stutter bollocks.
And high.
Yeah.
Just hitting it high. Like Owen Hargreaves' penalty in Moscow. Oh, Anderson's penalty. Like, you hit penalties like that. They can't be saved. And I guess there's more margin for error, perhaps. But yeah, if you can smash one into the roof, I guess that is a technique that you've practiced with which you feel comfortable. Yeah, just maybe do that all the time.
Africa Cup of Nations final, was it 3-4 years ago, where I think it was 13-12 in the end or something like 14-12 on penalties. And like almost every single one was going into the top bins. That's the best penalty shootout I've ever seen. Most United penalty shootouts have not been. We were shy for many years.
I was strolling on Twitter just earlier today and I saw this video of all these penalties and I was like, oh my God, there's penalties from Gdansk. I thought, no, definitely do not need to see these ones again.
You do not. And United's third goal. Oh, I guess we got the equaliser, didn't we? Brereton Diaz, now Chilean striker by Blackburn.
Are you a Chilean? I thought in America you'd be a Chilean.
Chilean? No, I can't do that. Or Caribbean. No. And there's some things I'll adapt to culturally to fit in. But yeah, talking wrong, not going to do that. Then we have Bruno's fine strike with his left foot. Who knew he can hit them that hard with his left? I think my leg would fall off if I tried to hit a ball that hard with my left. It just like, no chance. But yeah, good one from Bruno. That's 8 in the last 6 games, I think he's got now.
Yeah, and lots of assists as well.
Yeah, I think it's 28 goals and assists this season. So it's not even nearly his top season. But it's
And there's only one bad. Player. Cole Palmer is the only person in the league with more goal involvements than him. And I mean, I don't think taking penalties are cheating, but he's taken a load of penalties.
Right. So yeah, all in all, like we're still chasing fourth. In theory, we could still make fourth if Villa lose the next 4 games and we win our next 4 games.
So, sorted.
Or if Villa lose the next 4 games by a cricket score and we score like 6 in each of them and then we could draw the other one.
Also fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Seems unlikely because we'd also need Spurs to scrap because I think that fifth place for the Champions League is probably unlikely now that...
Yeah, it's gone.
I mean, if Villa win the Conference League, that leaves it potentially open, I think, depending on other results. But
then Leverkusen are playing Roma. Roma aren't beating Leverkusen over 2 legs.
Seems unlikely.
Even if Madrid beat Bayern.
Yeah. So yes, probably gone. So although I think the Europa is now guaranteed for 6th, someone pointed out, because if Manchester City win the FA Cup, the Europa League place goes to the league, not to the runners up of the cup. But if we win the FA Cup,
it should also be us.
So 6th place will get a Europa spot.
Yeah. I mean, who would have thought that feels slightly comforting?
Oh God. I mean, It's marginally better. It's just, you know, it's...
No, it's a lot better. It's a lot. Like, the humiliation of being in the conference. It is a lot better. Like, you don't ever want to have to play in that competition.
Awesome.
Because at least if you win the Europa, like, that feels like some level of achievement of some sort. Winning the conference, just like, nah, man.
It's also a spot in the Champions League if we are desperate enough next season after whatever changes are made.
Oh my gosh, yeah. If we need the Europa League to get the Champions League next season, that would be disappointing. Talking of which,
yeah,
we were talking about Flicks earlier, which was meant to be my segue into Hansi Flick, not Herr Flick of Allo fame. But I mean, I guess he is also a Herr Flick, but so it seems that Arne Slot, if that's how you pronounce it, is going to Liverpool, like, ball Dutchman, what could fail?
Mm-hmm.
And Xavi's staying at Barca.
Yeah, surprisingly. Yeah.
And Uncle Wreck-It Ralph is going to Bayern.
Amazing. Amazing. Great stuff. Yeah, it would be good if his first press conference is, we need open heart surgery here at Bayern. We're looking forward to that.
He was right in most of what he said. His management was wank, though.
Yeah.
Like, I always say this, but like, imposing that 4-2-2-2 just because that's a formation that you like rather than in any way
serves
the players that you have, I guess prejudiced me against him.
Mind you, I think that's a criticism you can level at Erik ten Hag as well with United. There are players not playing in their ideal role.
Yeah, I think I agree that that is true, but that is also partly because he doesn't have players to play any, like, we don't have a good team. In any formation, there's no, like the best team, maybe if we did like an old school WM, like a 2-3-5 or something, we can maybe manage that. but there isn't a good team in there. So he's always trying to like brush a bit of hair over a bare bit. And then realizing that actually that just leaves another bare bit somewhere else. And
you're just teasing him now because he's got no hair to brush.
I'm teasing us, Ed. I do think it's not him turning up. And so, I mean, he's almost done the reverse of that in a way. Said, this is how I want to play football. Oh, when I think we'd be keener on him actually saying, this is how I want to play football. We're going to build towards it. Rather than I'm going to chuck it in the dustbin. So yeah.
would you accept Hansi Flick?
I mean, it's a good question. He has an amazing first part of his career, didn't he? And then failed with Germany. Probably not entirely his fault that he failed with Germany, given they were a bit chaotic during the World Cup and perhaps don't have the players that they need. So yeah, maybe I would. I mean, all feels like a gamble.
Every manager is a gamble. So it's not that, but I just wonder if out of what there is, if he's not going Bayern or Germany, which he isn't, he's available.
Is he, James from Muppeteers was saying a more possession-based style is what the Ineos team are looking at. And they've kind of settled on that with Berada and Ashworth. And when he arrives, and just his laptop full of transfer targets left at Carrington by mistake. So far, and Jason Wilcox and the whole new team is in place. That's what they're looking for. If that's true, that tells me Ten Hag's out the door because he has clearly settled on something else. And I think when we've had a season of what we've seen, like Sheffield United game, a little bit more controlled, but not really.
And against them.
I think we know this is what he wants.
I guess he might say that this is the best way he thinks there is to do it with what he has. So if you want him to try another way, then he needs better players, which we know to be absolutely true, but also to be sort of not that true as well. I think he's out the door for being shit. I don't think they're going to fire him because they've decided that this nebulous style but Hansi Flick feels like a better bet than almost everyone else on that disgusting list.
His Bayern side played a very, very German, not quite the gegenpressing mega high press, but definitely the mid block style. So it was kind of be interesting whether he could, if he was a potential target, and he's not been mentioned anywhere or in any of the betting, or any of the spread markets. It would be a little adaption to the Premier League, I imagine. Ruben Amorim was talked about by everyone. Young manager, done great things at Sporting. West Ham trying to hire him. David Moyes' birthday. So happy birthday to absolutely everyone whose birthday is today, except for David Moyes.
Oh, man. I mean, it's also kind of intriguing because on the slot with Tottenham we're talking to and they prefer Postecoglou.
Big Ange. Yeah.
And I mean, it's just, again, like one of those things, and we cannot say this often enough. Whoever Liverpool the point will be significantly worse than Klopp. Because, the side that lost to Everton and keeps getting beat now, their level obviously isn't less good than Everton, but I do think that their level is losing games that you think they probably shouldn't because they are not that good. And winning all the games is hard, even when you are that good.
By the way, I think credit to United for totally fucking it.
Credit to Ten Hag. I mean, he pissed on Klopp's valedictory parade. I mean, you respect to that.
Beautiful stuff. Love it. I did. Quite enjoy, remember when they won the Carling Cup, whatever it's called now, and Trent Alexander-Arnold tweeted, 1 out of 4, still hungry.
Yeah.
All right, Trent.
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
Might need to get that meal planner out. Intermittent fasting. Good fuel.
Do you think they'll have an open top bus parade for their Carling Cup victory with Klopp's farewell, or is he just going to disappear and that'll be...
It is brilliant how quickly it's all fallen apart because I guess... Like that Atlanta loss was shocking. But then you're thinking, well, maybe they're gone. I really expect them to lose to Everton. Like one of the annoying things about this period is that they never lose to Everton. Like games when you have one team in a city that is good, often the derby is the one where you think, well, they might drop some points there. And they've basically victimized Everton for most of the last 20 years.
15 years, yeah.
So
No, it's true. Yeah. I mean, it comes down to a 2-horse race, I think. I mean, it feels like Liverpool are gone. I mean, it's a 4-point gap now.
I was talking to a mate in synagogue just yesterday, and he was saying he wanted Liverpool, he'd force Arsenal, season ticket holder was talking about Liverpool, how he hoped Liverpool losing last night. And I said, honestly, you don't need to think about that, because whatever happens, you are not going to finish third behind City and Liverpool. No. It's not like, you're not going to finish top with Liverpool coming second. That's not going to happen. If Liverpool win it, you're going to come third. But if you win it, it will be City that are second. You don't have to, like, Liverpool are not a danger in that way. City, I mean, City's still got to play Tottenham. So do Arsenal.
Yeah, they go to Brighton. But I mean, it's not, they're all games that you kind of, because Tottenham are hit and miss. Brighton, Forest, Wolves, Fulham, Spurs, and then West Ham. I don't know. I look at that and go, I can see City winning all six, especially since they don't have to worry about the Champions League.
The thing about City and the thing about Pep Guardiola's football is, whatever you think about where you rank all these teams, blah, 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 Pep Guardiola's football, and I don't even mean when it's just played by Pep Guardiola, I mean when it's played by Spain as well, is the hardest football to beat of all time, because it's, you don't get the ball. But the other team, with Pep Guardiola's football, he'll almost always have better players than you and better options than you. And the ability to deny the ball means that you don't have very much scope to beat them, which is why Spain were able to win 3 major trophies in a row without Guardiola and without centre forward, because they still had Guardiola's mainly midfield players,
yeah,
who were just, they barely scored any goals either, did they, Spain? In a lot of these later stages.
Won a bunch of them.
They didn't have a striker. They managed to find a goal at some point and keep the opposition away. So that's why you see these games that City have, and it feels really hard to beat them. Then you have a side like Brighton, who the way they play causes trouble for some teams, but it's just
not for City.
It's not dissimilar. It's just a less good version of the similar thing. So City tend not to struggle with that. Like, the problem, what City struggle with is teams that are solid at the back and can press them at the front and have good attackers.
We play them second to last. Play Arsenal. Arsenal play Spurs next, although they mostly beat Spurs. But we play them second to last game of the season. I mean, that might be one where we want to chuck it away now.
You're resting players for the cup final. I remember as a kid, my dad in 84-85, we play Watford, the game. I think it's the game before the cup final. My dad goes without telling me because he knows I'd be furious if I comes back and we've lost 5-1. And I'm still absolutely raging that they've come without me. And that was the last time you went without me.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That's fair. All right. What else is going on in the world of United? That's about it, really. No movement on the Ashworth front, because it's still haggling. There was a Telegraph piece by Ducker saying Newcastle are after 15 million plus 5 million in bonuses for Ashworth, and United have offered 2. Seems to be some gap between them. Is this pride with Newcastle? Because they paid 4 million. And it's absolutely mental that there's now a transfer market for executives. This is not talent. These are executives.
And also, how good can this guy be? Are you genuinely telling me that he is 15 million? That's whatever. I mean, I guess they're not going to pay 15 million quid. Just seems so unlikely that he's worth that sort of money.
It's absolutely mad. Executives, not talent. I mean, there are lots of executives out there. I mean, some better than others, as we've seen with Edward Wood and Richard Arnold. Obviously good to have people who know what they're doing in these important positions. But yeah, 20 million, absolutely nuts. I think this is more about saving face and making sure he's not around for, in fact, I would bet that this will get done the day after the transfer window closes, something like that. Or very shortly afterwards, and it will just be about delaying his introduction. In the meantime, it looks like Jason Wilcox, who was at the game last few games, is taking that role and going to be leading, and Barada joins in June. It's rather late, but for planning purposes, I'm sure he's on the phone right now.
And I guess, I mean, it feels, Wilcox makes a lot of the footballing decisions. And it's quite an interesting, it's always a gamble, I guess, but given his pedigree is what? Southampton.
Yeah, youth head of youth development or head of youth recruitment at City, and then technical football director at
I mean, what he's now being asked to do is a massive step up. And I mean, I I mean, I guess Berardi will probably know him, but his relevant experience is relevant, but not at that level at all. So, I mean, I hope he's good. He's going to have to be.
On which point, I got a question from Brian Roy, friend of the show. He says, on the next pod, could you address the various roles United have been hiring for, and in simple terms, what exactly the roles are supposed to be? Railsford, Berardi, Wilcox, Ashworth, etc., and so on. They all seem to be very samey titles. So it would be good to know which each one does, plus anyone else. Yeah, I mean, I think this is simple, really. Brailsford's just that he's a consultant. He works for Ineos Sport, the sports division of Ineos, and he's bestie mates with Jim Ratcliffe. And I'm sure he'll disappear from being sort of hands-on. Apparently, he's been sleeping at Carrington, which
nuts. His wife kicked him out.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Yeah. Berardi's CEO is going to be CEO, and there isn't going to be a CEO above him on the commercial side. So he's a CEO. Everyone else who has an executive role will report to him, and he will report to the owners. So I think that one's.
I just added Berardi. I think the thing with Berardi is is the guy who will be making the big sign off on all the big decisions. Obviously, with money, he'll need to go to the money men. But the person in the M, like Jim Ratcliffe, if I'm a Berardi comes and says, they're going to be the manager. Ratcliffe's Ineos aren't going to probably overrule him because they've employed him to not do that. But it'll be.
And I get the sense that he is not going to be, because right now every budgeting decision goes to Florida for a sign off, or I think actually Joel is based in Washington DC, isn't he? And so it goes to them for a sign-off, and that's why United are really, really slow and make really crappy decisions. And I think that is not how United are going to operate from now on. They will have a budget, which they have to have anyway for FFP, PSR, squad cost rule purposes, and he will go work to that budget. And, of course, that's the football side, but he'll have an overall budget. Wilcox, hasn't he been given the title of football director, or is he technical director? It's one of these ones where he's not director of football, which will be Ashworth. But it seems like Wilcox will be quite hands-on with some of the operational decisions around there.
Oh, yeah, I think he's going to be, like not day-to-day because that's the manager, but he's basically manager's boss, isn't he? He's going to be overseeing the way that this is how Manchester United are going to play. Obviously, you'll have to talk to Berardi about that, but it will be him that is across which kids, like, they might be good, where there are other good players knocking around. I would imagine managing the scouting system and working out how we're going to play. So those, basically the job, that we'd all want, I guess, people, this is one.
Yeah. And there's a recruitment department. It doesn't seem like they're changing the recruitment head, O'Brien, at the moment. And then Ashworth is basically like a COO. Seems like he's going to be doing the operation. So who has responsibility for what? What the structure should look like? And this looks very much like he has had a say in this already, even though he's not Dodd Woodwink. He's on gardening leave at the moment. And so, yeah, I think that's it. And it just feels like a professional, modern.
Yeah, like, so I guess Ashworth is more, football like structure. Player contract. Making sure that all the scouts know where they're meant, that everyone's in the right place at the right time, the relationships are right, and all the different aspects of the club are working in harmony, to me feels like Ashworth's job. Like, he doesn't feel like he's a football expert. It feels like he's an expert. Whereas.
And then the other one is Darren Fletcher, who it looks like he's going to have a kind of pathway.
Mascot.
Which is the mascot. Now, which kids are. Have a potential pathway towards the first team. Talking of which, we didn't mention him, but Wheatley came off a massively winning season with the under-18s. So they won the under-18s Premier League and the under-18s Premier League Cup, beat Manchester City. He scored in that game. He also got a hat-trick against Liverpool when United beat them 9-1 a couple of weeks ago. So it's been an excellent season for him. He's a big unit. Well, he's skinny, but 6'4", and very, very nearly got a goal. Bruno apparently said to him when he came on, enjoy it, I'm going
to
get
you a goal. I've got 8 minutes to get you a goal.
I've got 8 minutes to get you a goal. He very nearly did it. There was that cross that was just cut out and Wheatley standing there about 3 yards out ready to poke it in. It was a shame. I was cheering him on. But give him 250th player to come from United's Academy into the first team. And United put a really excellent video out on the socials with most of the 250.
I won't, because I won't lie. I find official club United's focus on this a little bit grating because we're making a virtue out of necessity. If obviously United is all about giving young players a chance and particularly ones that come from Manchester or Stockport in this case. So that's a great thing, but it feels like it's been used to take the piss out of us over the last two decades.
It is. I mean, look, there's good commercial reasons for doing it. It's, you spend a fraction of the amount if you get a good player coming into the team. Note Alejandro Garnacho. You can build a fourth revenue stream if you sell players well. City, Chelsea have done this.
And United really, under Fergie did it quite well sometimes too. Everton and Sunderland.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And also it's for whatever the DNA of United is, it's part of it. But it's true. What with what happened in 58 and the youth team, there is some marketing around it, which can go from being identity to a stretch.
Yeah. It's not so much the marketing is more we're having to use all these young players because the team's been underfunded and neglected. And so look,
poorly funded, mostly, but yeah.
Yeah. So you get these players coming in, you think, well, okay, but yeah, it shouldn't actually be like this. And it shouldn't even be like this now with all those kids on the bench. But it feels, I guess, like hopefully it's moving in the right direction now. But we're at least going to run like a football club. I mean, maybe the curse is still good, but doing the right things at least.
Yeah. And there's a load of those under 18 players that are very, very good. Yeah. We've had quite a few of them on the bench recently. All right. At the weekend, Saturday, we play Burnley. Saturday, 3 o'clock kickoff for the traditionalists amongst you. Burnley is a dead rubber. Burnley down, basically, aren't they? I mean, it's for all Vincent Company's sort of Pep Guardiola legacy. Yeah.
They've
been pretty shit. I guess in theory, there's only 3 points to Nottingham Forest, given Forest's points deduction. Could they make it? They've only won 5 games this season. And their goal difference is minus 32. Whereas, lads, we have positive goal difference.
What a team.
You aren't seeing that. At least half the league won. Yeah, I mean, we it's not worked for Burnley. They've tried to play good football. They do play good football. They're going down. And are there any players that we like in the Burnley squad? Even James Trafford, who was moved from Manchester City reserves.
£300 million.
For a huge fee. Yeah, I'd take a look closely at someone's laptop for that one. What was going on? He's not been the calming presence. He's good with his feet, though. So there you go. You have that.
Yeah, I mean, we're Burnley are crap and we'll beat them. I mean, I don't really know what else to say. But for me at this point, and I'm looking at the cup final and I'm thinking if I'm Ten Hag, like, you have this problem. You have to get the team firing for that cup final without risking injury and fatigue while still maintaining rhythm in games that don't count, which is hard to do. But also you need to be working on the plan. I mean, I don't know. And I could be totally making this up, but when United are going for the treble and they've got Bayern coming up and they've got no Keane and no Scholes in the Blackburn game, Fergie plays, I think he plays Giggs and Bill Neville in midfield, maybe. Because it feels like he's experimenting and he's thinking, and I actually felt like until the cup final, when Beckham comes into midfield, when Keane goes off and plays well, I think Giggs was going to play midfield in that game. And actually probably would have been a better decision because
Fergie talked about it, didn't he? He said, we were thinking about playing, well, for the Champions League final, we were thinking of playing Giggs there, but we thought he was too bursty.
Yeah. So I mean, obviously we now know that Giggs actually was a really good central midfield player. And this is one of my big regrets of him playing that position when he was younger. But also just think about it. The way that team were most likely to score a goal was Beckham cross into the middle. By putting him in the middle, they took that away. They then compounded it by putting Blomqvist on the left.
Giggs on the right. Yeah.
And Giggs on the right. So you've got Giggs out and Beckham out of position. Blomqvist has a stinker, and he's just not as good. So I say, but I'd like to see us working towards, we've got this game. It'll be humiliating if we lose. It was humiliating last year to lose a second straight cup final to City. I mean, who needs that in their life? And I want him to be trying to find a way of making that happen.
Yeah. Well, and it is true that the only way we're going to beat City is by having coming up with a special tactical plan, because it cannot be chaos ball. It just cannot be. Like, when they are going to have so much possession and will create so many chances and they score. The City archetypal City goal is the archetypal
we can
goal.
See. Beautiful symmetry.
Oh, man. All right. And that's going to be for the midweek pod. Thank you very much for supporting us. I'll probably be back with a daily tomorrow, Friday. I have a chaotic diary.
At least you're not going to Thorpe Park.
At least I'm not going to Thorpe Park. Is that what you're doing?
I mean, it is empty because all the schools are back at school apart from the Jewish schools. So it'll be full in a different way. But
well, don't lose your lunch on the roller coasters.
Yeah, I mean, I can go on them. Like, I don't enjoy them. On my stag, we were in Blackpool and we were on one of these rides that I can't remember if it just fires you up into the air or fires you down into the air. But I didn't want to do it, and we'd had a fairly hectic evening. So we do it. And this, I guess it fired you up, because as we're coming down, I was like, said to one of my mates, am I crying? He's like, yeah, you are. Kind of weird. And I mean, there's a lot going on. Yeah, later that night, someone poured a shot of insanity sauce and secreted them among other shots. So it wasn't even necessarily one that I was going to have, because they poured a few, but I took one anyway without it. And that was like nothing I've ever experienced before in my life, like a full body experience of I don't even know what. And so I called my wife to tell her that the joke. And then I was saying, I realized I was crying again.
Oh, dear Daniel. I'm off to a tequila night. Tequila and me do not mix very well. And so I'm rather worried about that one. In fact, the last time I drank tequila, I was with a friend of the show, Joey, in Los Angeles watching the Liverpool versus Tottenham Champions League final, and managed to spend a fair amount of that evening passed out.
So seems like a good plan.
It's not a good plan. It's really not. All right, everyone, don't do that.
But better than watching Liverpool with the European Cup.
Much better. Yeah, I'd rather have been passed out for the whole bloody thing. Thank you very much.
Decades.
At least we won't get to see it this year, and we won't get to see a Liverpool title win.
Which is a funny thing, actually, because this is the first Champions League final in a very time that we haven't had to worry about what might happen. If you go back through them, so we've got City, Inter, Liverpool, Madrid, City, Chelsea, and we've got, apart from the COVID Paris Bayern one, then we've got Tottenham, Liverpool, Madrid, Liverpool. That Juve Madrid one, 16-17, was the last time, apart from the COVID one, where it wasn't horrendous.
That's nice. Nice feeling, isn't it? Although I think we're probably going to see a City title win. I'm just going to write it off to cheating. All right. Thanks very much, everyone. Bye now.
Please.